home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. I'm your host, Garrett Miller, and for the next hour, we've got a fun and exciting show with you. Author Chris Ando is going to be joining us. He is the author of Delusions of Grandeur, available on Amazon.com and wherever fine books are sold. We'll be having him on in a couple of minutes. But before we get to Chris, we want to kind of give you a rundown of where we've been, where we're going, and all the exciting things that are going on this week. If you have not had the chance to catch our brand new Saturday morning broadcast, it's like going back and watching cartoons when you're a kid, but this is in no means a show for the children in the audience. I don't think we have anybody younger than, 97 listening to the show anyway. So Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock, Paul Emery and I do a new show called Super Gay Radio, starring Paul in Mass. Cause of course, Paul in Mass is his, I guess you call it like a screen name when he was a regular caller to Sirius XM's OutKey before the demise of that channel. So we're just having some fun for an hour every Saturday morning talking about what, honestly, it's whatever Paul wants to talk about. And it's always fun to spend an hour with him. You know, I'll tell you, at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm usually on the elliptical getting my exercise in. And the last thing that I really want to do is radio at that point. And because I'm just coming off of this diet, and my goal with myself is I don't ever eat or drink anything until after I get my hour of cardio in and get, I have like this list of things that I have to do. So that's what I have to do before I can eat anything. Cause I also weigh in before I go drink my first sip of anything. And so at 8 o'clock in the morning, I really would like a big mug of coffee, and I would really like to drink about two of those and get my cardio done and do all of that. So starting to do the show with Paul at 8 o'clock, probably about 7:55, I'm like, what am I thinking doing this? But by 8:01, I'm like, I'm in, and it's just a fun hour, and everybody's tuning in and sharing that. So I hope that you enjoy it as much as I do. But that's a new show that we're doing on Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock. The rest of this week, surprise, surprise, we're actually live at 7 o'clock every single night. Tomorrow, we're going to have author Jeff Michaels on. He's got a new book out about death and dying, and as depressing as that topic may be, it seemed very timely with a lot of people I know who have had family and friends that have passed in the last week and the last month, and are going through that, or, have parents maybe who are getting ready to, cross that rainbow bridge for, humans. And he's written this fantastic book. Now, he does not want to really promote or talk about the book, which is funny because, he's an author trying to sell some books. But he's got a whole host of other new books that are on the market. So it's whatever Jeff wants to talk about tomorrow night. But I want him to talk about the death book. And his wife wrote me an email today and says, he really doesn't want to promote this. And I said, okay, I guess the meme that I created for Dr. Death, Jeff Michaels, I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board. I didn't really do that, but I just thought that was a fun, fun note. And I'm sure he would really absolutely hate it if we called him Dr. Death, Jeff Michaels. So we're not going to call him that, but we'll talk about his death and dying book tomorrow. On Wednesday's show, we have psychic medium Zoe Niklaus and Doug Johnston returning for a 90-minute broadcast. And if you have a question that you would like to have answered, we call it kind of like a twofer, because Doug's a psychic astrologer and Zoe is a psychic energetic healer. So you call in and you ask your question and they will both answer it independently, and you'll get it kind of like a two-for-one special. And that's Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Thursday on Rated LGBT Radio, we have my co-host Rob Watson and I. We're going to be welcoming Greg Archer. He is the star creator and producer and writer of this new web series called The You and the Me. So we're going to be hearing about the response that he's getting now that this is live on YouTube. You can go check out the episodes now. I'm up to about episode 7. The episodes aren't that long, but you get into just the cycle of watching them all, and I think I'm up to episode 7. And then on Friday, we've got Oleg Frisch, who is in New York City. He's going to be our musical guest. And now the interesting thing is Oleg and I have been friends on Facebook for several years. And when I first started the show several years ago, I asked Oleg to be on the show. We've connected, and kind of missed each other. And now his marketing company, or I guess his publicist, said, would you like to have Oleg on the show? And I thought, this is just too funny. So it took a publicist to bring us finally together. And that'll be Friday. By the way, if you're in the Southern California area, our monthly comic, John Cooperman, will be at the Ice House in Pasadena this Friday night at 8 o'clock. And if you go to the show and tell him that you heard him about him on Rated G Radio, I think he's even going to buy you a drink. So that's John Cooperman this Friday at the Ice House in Pasadena for his comedy set. And I guess there's a bunch of folks that are going to be performing, but next week's promo, John's on the show on Monday night. So just wanted to make sure that if you can go and see John, support the cause and do that. Now, without further ado, I want to bring Mr. Chris Ando back to the show. Chris, how you been?
I've been doing well, and I'm really psyched about this week. You have some exciting
it's
guests.
Crazy.
A lot of great topics, too, things that I'm interested in. Like, I've always been morbidly fascinated with the subject of death. I was raised in a haunted house. My dad died when I was 2 years old. But to this day, if I meet anyone who works in a nursing home or in the healthcare field, that's one thing I always – I get them alone in a corner, and we start talking about that whole transition and what a fascinating thing that is.
So are you one of – and I'll just tell you, Chris, you know, outside of the show, we haven't really talked that much, but before I moved to California, I was the staunch suit-wearing, short-haired – Republican, you know, that I would only eat a steak. I would never try anything new. And now I'm like this long-haired hippie, crystal wearing, essential oil wearing, you know, you energetic believing, psychic loving guy out here in California. And I drink the California Kool-Aid by the 5-gallon drum at Costco. So I believe it all now. How deep do you go into your belief of how things work? What do you think about when you think of like death and dying? Do you go to heaven or do you go to hell or do you change energy? What's your thought?
Well, you know, I mean, energy can't be created nor destroyed. And there's just so many people that have experiences with the afterlife that I definitely believe there is something that happens. And I wish, I don't pretend to know what it is, but other than something's there. So is it residual energy? You know, is it a byproduct of being alive that part of you lingers and goes through some of the motions that you went through? I'm not sure, but I do know that the house I grew up in was one of the most haunted houses I've ever experienced to this day, and even non-believers come away from it a little, hair on end sometimes. Particularly in the hall, it's a ranch-style house with a really long hallway that my mom's lived in since the 60s. And when you go to the restroom at night when the lights are off, it's almost like a strobe light effect of something opaque that gets in your way, and you reflexively jerk like you're getting ready. That feeling when you're getting ready to run into someone, that excuse me feeling. You get that five or six times in that one hallway, and then it's gone immediately. And to this day, when I go down and visit, if I wake up in the middle of the night and have to use the restroom, there's this sense of dread, first of all, that comes over me because I don't want to go down that hallway. But what I do is I either close my eyes and just plow through it, because if your eyes are closed, nothing happens. Or I turn my phone on now, and just if there's light on, nothing seems to happen. But yeah, it's an uneasy feeling. And
I just got goosebumps all over when you said that.
I grew up with ghosts, you know, and so it's always been a subject that is
okay, Chris. You can't really – I don't know if you can hear it. I just turned my Bic lighter on because I always burn a candle pretty much all the time, a white candle for the, you know, the white light. So now I'm going to burn some sage in here and clear the air. So I'm clearing my space with sage right now. So, wow.
Already? You shouldn't do that till the end of the show.
I know. Well, I'll have to do it at the end of the show now too. But now, you know, it's like, okay, we've got, you know, we've got some things going on. So did your mom ever say – okay, we need to get a priest in here and we're going to do an exorcism? Or what was it like growing up in that environment? How early did you know that something weird was going on?
Well, nobody else would really confirm. You know, the whole family acted like I was crazy as a kid. And it wasn't until I got older that they started conceding that there was something. You know, I guess they thought that they'd make it worse or freak me out more so. And I contributed to it about probably seventh grade. The summer I think it was the summer between 7th and 8th grade, someone brought a Ouija board, and me and some macabre friends took it upon ourselves to play with the Ouija board every day one summer and invited all kinds of horrible things into that house. My mom is a German and is very practical, and she's not one to get rattled. I always say she'd be one of the least satisfying people to haunt because she's not going to give you a reaction. You know, she's just a pretty cut and dry type person like that. But even she's been rattled because on three different occasions she's woke up convinced that somebody was in bed with her. And her mind didn't jump to ghost, even though she's lived in that house with all of the paranormal activity. Even then, her mind still didn't jump to ghost. Her mind jumped to practical concerns like there's an intruder, there's a rapist, why is somebody in bed with me, what are their intentions? And then she'll flip on the light and nobody's there. You know, but she'll feel the bed. I don't know how she lives in that house alone. I really don't, because it's so unsettling to me.
That would be really creepy.
Yeah, but so the family acted like I was crazy until maybe I was in high school, and then we had a ghost cat. And it was this cat that everybody saw, but you only saw the back half of it as it was turning a corner. And you'd see it in the middle of the day, and guests would be over, and someone would say, "Oh, I didn't know you had a cat," because they would just see the back half of it
in
the corner. And that only lasted a year or so, but the ghost cat kind of got everybody talking and comparing stories, and now everyone
it brought the family together.
It does. Thanksgiving dinner, people all talk about the ghost and compare notes about what they've seen.
So now I just mentioned the sage. I actually do burn the sage in the house, and I go through and I have a little, you call it a prayer or a recital that I go through when I do it. And I clean the energy probably, once a week. So, if it's things are just like kind of crazy in my head, I'll go and do it more often. Have you ever done any type of like a clearing exercise or, said to the ghost, "Okay, it's time for you to go. See that light over there? Go for it."
I have, especially at because it has been so unsettling when I'm at my mom's, and I was entertaining people there a few years ago, and I had a friend that was, fundamentalist Christian with some, I don't know all their traditions, but she could do house blessings, and she did believe in ghosts to an extent, I guess. And so she went through and did a blessing of the house, which I found comforting. And then I was in the house by myself after everybody left, and then someone sent me a series of photos that we took when we were all together in the house, and I had an orb over my forehead.
Wow.
And it was not a fun thing. So I don't think it worked because things in that house continued on.
So do you think they are evil spirits or good spirits? Or do you think that there's a difference between them?
No, there's definitely a difference, and there is something bad there. I've woken up maybe twice in my life, not for many years, but I've woken up twice to the bed shaking, and it stops shaking as soon as I wake up. So I don't know if I'm shaking and I wake up to the residual shaking or if the bed is actually shaking, but I wake up and the mattress is just rolling at the tail end of that, And so that's supposed to be something really, really bad. But other than that, I've lived in houses that were haunted and that completely weren't since then, and I can really tell the difference. No house is as haunted as my mom's, but the way I describe it is when you're in a house that's really haunted, the dark is soupy. So if you stare into the darkness, there's a thickness, like a stew, kind of energy is thick. But I lived in a house in Oklahoma City about three doors down from a Catholic church, and it was the least, even though it was built in the 20s, it was the least haunted house because it had probably been blessed every single time it changed hands.
Right.
It was in a big Catholic neighborhood. But I could walk through that house pitch black, and that the black was so empty, there was nothing that
you
made me any
knew that it
about
was,
it.
Yeah.
But I do have a story for you. There was a Creole woman that lived a few doors down from me in St. Louis, and we were at a Halloween party that was more party than Halloween. And we started laughing about something, and she touched my arm as we were laughing the way people do, and she jerked back. She pulled back, and she said, "You've got some energy about you." And I pressed her on it, and then she wanted to change the subject. And I said, "No, what did you mean?" And she didn't want to alarm me. And she said, "I have a whole entourage of spirits who follow me."
Oh.
And she said that I've opened a door at some point, and I need to figure out I need to close it. And I said, "Well, how
wow.
do I do that?" And she said, "Well, I'll have to get back with you."
Did she ever learn?
No, because then I moved back to the Bay Area right after that. But her argument was that it's not necessarily that there were bad spirits around me at the time, but that the door was open was bad. And I believe, if she's correct, that it comes from that time in my youth when I was playing with the Ouija board and,
wow.
you know, maybe something fixated.
You know, one of the weird things, and I say weird because, you know, but I buy it all. You know, once you tell me, carry these crystals with you, this one does this, this one does that, and that one does the other thing, I'll say, "You're absolutely nuts." And I start carrying them around. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, they totally do." And there's, right. I just dropped one right now. So back in December, I was at a Christmas party, and the host of the party had overheard a conversation I was having with somebody about gratitude. And, you know, I write it in a gratitude journal, and every day I get up and, you know, I say, "Here's what I'm grateful for." And he goes, "Oh, so are you doing a God and Angels placemat list?" And I looked at him and I said, "You know, what in the heck are you talking about?" I said, "That's just, you know, like everything. That's crazy talk." He says, "Every day when I get up, I take I have a notebook, and the first thing I do is I write three things that I'm going to do today, you know, and so I'll share mine." So, you know, like for today, it was, "I need to exercise." I did that first thing. "I need to write." That's going to happen after the show. And the third thing was, "Have a great show tonight with Chris." And so then after that, though, I write, you know, "God and Angels, you know, I am asking for your help." And then list everything else that's below that that you want help with, you know, and it might be like, you know, I always write it in I am or I have statements, like, "I have enough money to pay all my bills and I always have money left over," or "I'm at my perfect weight of 175 pounds or whatever. So your list could be, you know, whatever you want. And I will tell you, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I always say is, you know, "Thank you, angels, and I'm inviting you into my life, and I'm asking for your help in my life today. So thank you very much." And before I go to bed, I go, "Thank you, angels, for today." And here's where it sounds crazy, but I will tell you, since I started doing this in mid-December, I've had so many miraculous and great things start to take place in my life that, you know, introductions that have been made, you know, projects that I'm working on, invitations to appear in things where, you know, I've never been considered or thought of before. And the phone rings or the email comes and I'm going, "I think this is because my angels are helping me out. So thank you, angel."
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's kind of freaky if you, you know, are sitting out there anywhere and going, "This guy's lost his marbles." I probably have, but I'm going to tell you, whatever, you know, whatever soup I'm drinking, I'm going to keep eating it because it seems to work for me. But the angels or the spirit
important.
Things. Yeah.
You know, gratitude and how you care for what you have. And, you know, you think about people who have everything on the surface. You know, they have fortune and fame, and you don't see how they could be wanting for anything. And then they get hooked on serious drugs and die, you know, because there's an emptiness that they're trying to fill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've been in relationships with people before who completely lacked gratitude, and no matter what new plateau we reached in our income. And I talk about this somewhat in the book. At one point, I calculated that my partner and I were in the top 5% as far as annual income.
Wow.
And it blew my mind because we were always talking about being broke. You know, there was no gratitude.
Right.
We lived in the Bay Area. Our rent was $2,400 a month. And in the Bay Area, as you probably are aware, being in California, it's really not about how much money you make. It's about how much money you have.
Right.
Right. So, because, you know, you can have the income for a $600,000 or $700,000 home, but if you don't have that 20% down payment,
forget
you know,
it.
It's not going to do you any good, right? And so, but since then, you know, I've just realigned my life, and gratitude means everything to me. And even in my vehicle, I picked out this vehicle that I like. And sometimes I'll sit in the morning and say, "Hello, beautiful car."
Yeah.
Because I value.
Right.
And when you value something, and especially the people in your life, the animals in your life, when you're constantly caring for what's important and telling the universe what you value, telling the beings in your life what you value, it just makes everything so much richer. And also when you drop the need for pretense, that helps too, because so much of our suffering, I think, comes from trying to convince everyone of the story we're trying to sell.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And that,
it's a whole lot
that's one
easier being authentic.
Talking about I had intended to talk somewhat about the political season, but
good,
what
I have questions for you.
Good. What I'm seeing is the dropping of the facade, because these issues of exporting the jobs and the trade agreements and the things that have both Trump and Bernie people especially paying attention, you know, these things have been going on for 40 years now. But our culture in America was to worship the rich and to be a winner. And so for you to articulate that you were struggling financially was to admit that you were a loser. And
right.
That kind of psyche enabled this problem to get so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everyone continued to make less money, adjusted for inflation, and have a harder time, but nobody would talk about it because no one wanted to be a loser. So it's especially hit home in the Bush years, when everyone was buying McMansions all across the country that they couldn't furnish or afford, and just desperately trying to put on these airs. And so it's very fascinating now that pretense has dropped, and all of a sudden everybody admits that they're furious.
Well, as somebody who mistakenly built that McMansion in 2006 and then went down in flames, I know exactly what you're talking about. So, yeah,
you and me both. I didn't build one. I bought a big old one that interestingly once belonged to a player in the savings and loan crisis in Oklahoma City.
Of course.
So, and lost it in the savings and loan crisis. I came and bought the big house during the Bush financial bubble, and then lost everything with that. So,
yeah,
I've been there.
Yeah, it's funny. I closed on my house because it's funny. You know, at the time, my partner and I, you know, some people sit here and watch porn. I would sit and watch house plans or, you know, floor plans from different builders. You know, and he came home and caught me looking at floor plans one night. He says, you know, if you just want to build a house, just build a house. You know, if that's going to make you happy. And I said, I promise it will. You know, of course, that was not going to make me happy, but you know, it was the placebo. So, you know, he built this huge house, signed the papers 3 weeks before the bubble burst. So I paid the absolute most I could have paid for that friggin' house every upgrade I could have possibly had, picked everything out myself. You know, I was so proud of that house and went and, you know, bought 10 rooms of furniture, all brand new, all custom, you know, couldn't have paid more for it. You know, thinking, okay, well, it's going to keep going. It's going to keep going. And about 3 weeks after they signed the papers, bing, doo, 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 and then it was just, you know, it was horrible. I mean, and I'm hardly the, you know, the worst case out there, but it was what it did, you know, because like you were saying, Chris, it was living on that pretense and living in that imaginary, oh, let me show the world how successful I am by, you know, buying this $1 million house and, you know, clearly not being able to, you know, afford this given, you know, everything and thinking the market's going to continue to go up and up and up. But I mean, that whole thing, I take a look at my life, you know, 6 years or I guess now it's 10 years ago. And it just, I'm like, I don't even recognize that person. It's such a different life because now, you know, I'm not ashamed to tell the story, but my life has changed dramatically from a financial standpoint. And, you know, gone are the houses in Arizona, you know, and I moved to California, lived in a nice big house for a very long time. But by the time it was time for me to move out of that, you know, where I moved, I took, you know, I had a couple of boxes, but I legitimately had my computer, my desk, my elliptical, and a mattress. Didn't even have a bed frame. I said, and that was it. And so, you know, the days of having, you know, multiple 65 inch, you know, big screen TVs in several rooms of the house were gone, you know, and so all of that, you know, pretense, you know, went away. And I legitimately had a very big pity party for myself that lasted about 18 seconds. And then when I finally got into, you know, the place that I'm at now, I went, oh, I now know why. I needed to go through that so I can understand what I don't need to be impressed with, because that's now, at least that's where I'm at now. That's not impressive. And so it's funny, right, when I'm running around to these Hollywood events or Hollywood parties and I go into these huge houses that must be, you know, multiples of millions of dollars. And I went to one in end of February, I think it was, maybe it's earlier in February. But walked in, and seriously, everybody had a brand new Tesla. Everybody had a brand new, you know, whatever the $150,000, $200,000 car was, you know, and it's marble everywhere and super duper everything. And I was completely blown away. The house is absolutely gorgeous, but I kept thinking, you know, this must be really, really hard as a facade to maintain in order to just get by. And I no longer think that that is sexy. You know, there used to be a part of me that said, you know, oh, I'm really impressed with your big fancy car. Or, I'm really impressed with your big fancy house. And now it's like, you're going to have to work really hard, or people are going to, you had to have inherited the money in order to afford a lifestyle like that. And that doesn't really get respect for me anymore.
Sure. No,
I don't know.
I look at them, and especially in this part of the country, and I think, how much does this cost to heat?
Right.
You know, it's a whole different, I look at it just as a pile of expenses.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember the big house, you know, at my financial zenith, or one of them, my zenith of debt, I guess, just how when things went wrong with it, just having to come up with thousands and thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And I did it just like a drug addict comes up with money for their fix, you know? I mean,
right,
you just are in it, and that's what you have to do. And I would do whatever I had to do to come up with the $4,000 for the new AC or whatever it was.
Well, I think that the thing that really shocked me, because I was a miser in Phoenix, so I had this big 5,000 square foot house, and in Arizona, it's the weirdest thing ever. So if, you know, you're in another part of the country and I describe this to you, you're going to go, he is making this up. I can't make it up. You can check. Go to APS, that's Arizona Public Service, or SRP, Salt River Project. Those are the two energy companies that are back in Arizona, and or at least in the Phoenix metro area. And you had options to pay a standard rate, which was, you know, horrible, or you could go on what was called a time of day plan. So you could elect to have electricity, and if you use electricity during the high peak time, which was daytime, you paid about five times more than if you used electricity off peak. So the plan that I was on, it was from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. That was peak, so you never did anything. And I mean, no washing the clothes, no running the dishwasher, you know, you're not using the air conditioning or whatever the case is. And then at night, you know, that's when you crank on the AC and do that. You know, so the house, you know, I'd be gone all day. I'd be out selling to the world. Then I'd come home and I would keep the house at a balmy 87 in the day, you know.
Wow.
And I thought I was being good. And then at night, if I had had a really good day and I said, I'm going to have a big check this month, I would crank the AC all the way down to 80. And just think, boy, I am a living large, because I'm cooling off down to 80 degrees. But I had two AC units, and you know, and as miserly as I was, and I watched my electric like there's no tomorrow, my electric bill was still, I had equalized out over the course of the year, but on the peak months, you know, it'd be $600-$700. And that's me being a cheapskate. So I can't even imagine. And I had a brand new energy efficient home with double pane windows. We had, you know,
and
things
what
tinted.
What you could do with $600-$700 a month. Oh, I mean, the trips,
it's insane.
You know, the help that you could give somebody else. I mean, it's just,
So I'm so glad that I don't have any of that life anymore, because now I just look back and go, what was I thinking? But by the way, we're halfway through the show. We haven't even talked about your book, Delusions of Grandeur, much. So I want to do that. We're going to take a real quick commercial break. If you would like to call in and loin your voice, or you can lend your voice, one of the two, lend it to the conversation, ask a question or comment. Call in and ask Chris a question. Phone lines are open, 323-657-1493. You got to press 1. Otherwise, we just think that you're sitting here listening to the show on your phone, which lots of you are currently doing. That is fine. We want to also welcome brand new listener Keith out of Palisades Park, New Jersey tonight. Keith, thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Tony, for twisting his arm to get him to tune in. And we're going to come back in exactly 1 minute after this shameless plug for my album, Blonde Jesus, and then a nice little message from Rainbow Brew. Hey, everybody, it's Garrett Miller. Check out my brand new album, Blonde Jesus, voted number one rock electronica, and the hit single, Gay Wedding.
It's a nice day for a gay wedding.
Buy your copy today at GarrettMiller.com.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
There we go. We're back with author Chris Ando. His book, Delusions of Grandeur, is available where fine reading materials are in your area. I've put a hyperlink to his Amazon page right on the show page tonight, where you see Delusions of Grandeur with either an underline on my screen, it's blue. You click that and it's going to take you to Amazon. We always say support the guests who are on the show because they, you know, they love it. So buy 10 copies tonight, keep one for yourself. You will thank me later, and then give 9 away to people you want to impress this year. You will get great Christmas gifts if you give this book as a gift throughout the course of the year. So Chris, let's sell some books here. Tell us a little bit about your book. I know you've been on the show before, but for anybody who is new to the program, we get new people every day, or missed your prior interview, shame on them. Tell us about your book so we can go in and buy it and enjoy it.
All right. My book is about 245 stories, all true, of my adventures over the past 20 years. They weave in and out of St. Louis. I've lived in St. Louis on 3 occasions. Kind of developed a home base here. I go by the moniker, the Emperor of St. Louis, after becoming the king of the city's subway system. But lived in San Francisco on 2 different occasions as well. Lived in New York once, and I'm from Oklahoma. So there's stories from all of those places as well. Some are as little as a paragraph. Some are up to 10 pages tall. I'll read one for you if you'd like. This one's from San Francisco.
Yes. I love your stories. Are you kidding me? You're going to offer to read one? I'm going to say no. You're go, please.
Yeah, this one takes place in San Francisco. It's called East Coast Dancer. Lead abatement work was being done to our apartment, so we were put up at the aging Travelodge Motor Inn around the corner. It was dated and crummy, but being situated at Market in Valencia was walking distance to the Mission, Castro, and downtown. We were drifting off to sleep when our neighbors behind the adjoining door returned from a big night out of the clubs, pumped full of adrenaline. "I'm from the East Coast, and I dance with my whole body," one of the disembodied voices boasted. All night, people kept coming up to me like, "Whoa, you are so cool." The other disembodied voice seemed much more level-headed. "Wait a minute. I was with you all night and didn't hear anyone come up and say, 'Whoa, you are so cool.'" But the East Coast dancer was unfazed and kept boasting. We could hear every word, and when they decided to grab something to eat, I jumped out of bed and pinned a note to place on their door while they were out. "I just wanted to let you know that I watched you dance all night and thought to myself, 'Whoa, you are so cool.' But I didn't say anything because I'm sure everyone tells you that." Less than 5 minutes later, the pair returned, and there was a moment of silence as the note was read and digested. "No number? What the F am I supposed to do when there's no number?" exclaimed the East Coast dancer. "Dude, somebody's effing with you," the level-headed voice replied. "No, somebody followed us home, and I'm not comfortable with that." I love pranks. That's another thing. In addition to ghosts, I love pranks. And I'm surprised that they didn't pinpoint us in the room next door, because usually the next part of the story is how whoever I pulled the prank on knew it was me the whole time.
Well, I think they were just too self-involved, you know, about how wonderful they, you know, each of them were, that, you know,
right,
that never even crossed their mind. But that is so funny.
Sure.
You know, and I think what I love about your stories, Chris, is that when I started reading your book before we did the show the first time, not knowing your voice, not knowing how you talk, because, you know, when you read the story, it's like, I can totally see the story in the book, but, you know, hearing your voice tell the story absolutely brings it to life. But just reading it, just cold, I would sit there and laugh out loud at these people that have audacity. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but they are just so incredible as far as their personality goes, and think that they walk on water. And I keep going, wow, these are real people.
These are all real people.
Happened. Yeah.
And that's why it's hard for me to write fiction, because real life is so interesting. Now, this is one of the shortest ones I have for you, that's called Old Patsy Pallbearer.
Oh,
my
yes.
friend Mindy's mom, Patsy, was a funeral groupie. If she had any connection to the deceased, her mother's old coworker, her daughter's grade school teacher, an old neighbor's aunt, she'd be at the service just crying and carrying on. She called Mindy at lunchtime to fill her in on that morning's funeral. Oh, it was so sad, she wailed, recalling the grief-stricken family and their touching displays of emotion. Then, noticing the time, snapped right out of it. Mindy, I gotta go. I got another service at 2.
But that's you know.
Yeah, it's all real, and that's what fascinates me about life, is there's just these stories, they're just everywhere, and that's what
I'm. Are
I
you working
for,
on a
really.
Part 2? Have I asked you that before?
My part 2 takes place in Oklahoma City, and actually in Oklahoma. I grew up in Tulsa, and there was a gay park. It was the pre-internet, you know, like 1990, when I started hitting the streets, barely 16. And there was a park they called the Chicken Park, and all of us underage guys they called chickens. And the older queens would tell us all about Oklahoma City. That was the promised land, because there was this huge gay hotel called the Habana. It was like a repurposed Holiday Inn. It's still there. 200 rooms, 2 pools, several bars, and around the corner, there's nothing but, you know, more nightlife. And so that was the promised land, and we went and did I ever read you about the Habana? Because I do have one part that kind of alludes to that.
I would love you to tell that.
Yeah, this. So, and I always have to watch my language on your show. So,
no, it's you can swear here. I don't swear. So if I start swearing, it sounds like I have Tourette's and I don't stop. But if you swear, you're okay. It's rated G for Garrett, not G for, you know, like a movie.
Okay. Well, this one's a little bit longer, but it's worth it. So this is kind of the intro of what the Habana was like pre-internet, when it was at its zenith, because that's when, you know, you didn't have a computer to hide behind and everybody went out. So this one's called Habana Regulars. At its zenith in the early 90s, the gay Times Square of the Plains was the Habana Inn. And guys from Amarillo to Wichita to Tulsa to Little Rock, and even some slumming it from Dallas, would succumb to its siren song every weekend. Unlike the stagnant bars with unmarked doors in most towns within a few hundred miles, the Habana, with its nearly 200 rooms, 2 bars, 2 pools, restaurant and gift shop, brawling hive of activity, filled with excitement, colorful characters, and endless possibilities. Upon our arrival, the first vehicle we take note of was a 1974 Lincoln Continental with the vanity plate Wig Wagger. The car belonged to our friend Shad's mom, who was a wig stylist, and since he always drove it, Wig Wagger became his nickname. Wig Wagger's here, one of us would say as we began taking inventory. There was a residential wing where our friends Philip and Monty lived. I dubbed their room the Flygirl Suite, which I carved into the door. We check to see if their light was on and make a note to stop by. Another noteworthy car was a lemon-yellow 1982 Cadillac Eldorado that sounded like it was about to throw a rod. The driver was morbidly obese and looked like he'd been poured into the vehicle. As much time as he spent circling the hotel, or cruising the shame, as they called it, we never once saw him sans the car. And because of his size and the loud, unsteady nature of his ride, our friend Sam Hobbs nicknamed him Earthquake. We'd tailgate on the side of the hotel all evening, and since we were too young to go to the bars, and each and every time this guy rolled up, we're talking about dozens of times a night, Sam, who wasn't a petite guy himself, would flail into the street, arms outstretched, swinging wildly back and forth while shouting, "Earthquake!" Donald's friend Kyle from Bartlesville, 140 miles north, was always finding some boyfriend down in Oklahoma City and would spend summer weekends tanning at the Havana pools. He despised another group of regulars, three androgynous Native American brothers who, because of their lumpy, acne-scarred faces, he'd nicknamed the Cottage Cheese Sisters. Sprawled out on his lounge chair with a skinny body as oiled up and golden as a Cornish game hen, he'd catch a glimpse of these queens, sit up, tilt down his sunglasses, and yell at the top of his lungs, "Woo, honey, better get your face out of the sun before it spoils, Cottage Cheese Face." There were no dead ends at the Havana. Only twists and turns where more excitement might await. It's where the action was. The loitering chickens, the cruisy trolls walking past the windows, the guys looking in their windows with doors ajar, and the window masturbators, the people in cars circling the shame, the tailgaters, the queens going back and forth between bars, the eternally bitter Powerline Princess leafleting cars with rumors about Lloyd Spartan, the house phone in the lobby where you could dial any room, the fine diners under the gaudy brass chandelier overlooking the shenanigans at the pool through floor-to-ceiling windows, and then there was the nightly drama. There's nothing like seeing a drag queen get the bass in her voice, throw off the wig and heels, and fight like a man. One drag queen who could really throw down was Fantasy, a big black guy with his four front teeth missing. One night, a smart-talking punk mouthed off to her, and she picked him up like a twig and tossed him into the chain-link fence, mowing it over and knocking him out. A crowd formed, but was quickly parted by a portly white guy who shouted, "Stand back, boys! I'm a nurse!" Something was always happening in the main lobby, like the time, late one night, when Lloyd Spartan was detained by security, who allowed him to call his dad. "Tell him he's got 20 minutes to pick you up or you're going to detox," they threatened. His dad sprang into action, making it to the hotel from the hardscrabble south side in record time. Storming into the lobby, red-faced and disheveled, the rough-and-tumble man thundered, "I'm Lloyd Spartan Sr., and I don't give a goddamn about your gay hotel. I'll burn this son of a bitch to the ground." Wigwagger did something to get banned for several months, with the ban set to end on Thanksgiving Day. During his forced exile, he stood opposite the chain-link fence, longingly watching the hotel and talking to everyone who walked by. Each and every night when he saw the security guard, he'd ask, "I can come back on Thanksgiving, right? My ban's over on Thanksgiving." Dahl and I would joke, "You know he's taking his Thanksgiving dinner and going to eat it on the shame." The first time we visited the Havana, it must have really warped our young minds. We returned to Tulsa that Sunday afternoon and found ourselves at Utica Square, a high-end retail district where shoppers strolled by storefronts checking out window displays. Noticing the similarities between those looking through windows at the Havana and Utica Square, Donald said, "I feel like all these people are cruising." That's it.
What a great comparison, though, between the hotel and the mall.
Right. I mean, it's the same basic concept. You know, people walking by big windows and peeking in. You know, it's. I say that that the Habana was like a brick and mortar Facebook and Grindr rolled into one.
Yeah.
You know, because it had such a social component. It wasn't. I mean, yes, there was an incredibly seedy side to it, but it wasn't comparable to like a dirty bookstore because it is where you went to spend an evening. You know,
yeah.
And go to bars and even eat at the faux fancy restaurants. You know, that is to fine dining what General Foods International Coffee is to
right.
coffee. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
So, why would people ever want to leave that as a place to live or a vacation spot? Because it sounds lovely.
The Habana is still there, and it's doing okay. But when the Habana was at its peak, there were no options within hundreds of miles, real options. Even in Tulsa, which isn't that much smaller than Oklahoma City, the gay bars had unmarked doors, you know, in the early 90s. You still had to go in through some alleyway, or everything was really low-key. And you didn't have fresh blood, and that's what gay people want is fresh blood, especially if you're in a smaller place. And so if you were sitting in Tulsa, Wichita, Amarillo, Little Rock, or any of those small towns within hundreds of miles, why would you settle for whatever is nearby? You know, you can drive 2 hours and go to this wonderland. And it became that way because the backstory is really fascinating. There was a string of gay bars already in existence, and then there was this aging motor lodge, two-story motor lodge, like I said, Holiday Inn, and it had become obsolete almost overnight. Those things don't age well. So within a decade of opening, it was already in disrepair and going downhill. And because it was around the block from the gay bars, gay patrons started going there, and the straight owners, it started causing problems, and the straight owners had to make a decision. Do we discourage the gay patrons, or do we go all in? And so these two regular Oklahoma heterosexual business people made it a gay hotel. And the police started harassing the whole district, and the bar owners banded together, took them to court, proved harassment, and then the police, I believe to this day, can't go on premises to any of those in the gay district without probable cause.
Wow.
And it created in the middle of one of the most conservative parts of the country, it created this gay oasis. And so coming there from Tulsa as a teenager, it was just utopia. You know, it was so exciting. And these older washed-up queens, my best friend Donald rented a room from one of them named Bobby that was a washed-up bartender. And he thought Oklahoma City was the equivalent to L.A. I mean, he set me down when Donald was taking a shower and we were getting ready to go out. And the first thing he said was, "Let me tell you, you're not in Tulsa anymore. Queens in this town will chew you up and spit you out." You know, he was so enamored with that city and what a big deal it was. And later, what I'll leave you with that particular character, he ended up getting in trouble, I think for credit card fraud or something, and had to flee his beloved Oklahoma City, and was last seen at this pathetic little gay bar in Lawton, Oklahoma, about 90 miles southwest, and the bartender was ignoring him, too busy paying attention to someone else, and his glass was empty, and he was last seen banging it against the countertop, saying, "I'm from Oklahoma City."
Well, you know, it's fascinating, that story, and because I'm not a big bar person anymore, but you know, back in the day when I was, you know, going out on a regular basis in Phoenix, you know, I thought, well, nothing could be bigger than this. And then I went to San Diego, and then I went to, you know, Rich's. I don't know if you've been to San Diego and, you know, some of the establishments
right.
there, but you go in and you're sure. like, oh my gosh, I live in a tiny town by comparison, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you come to LA and you've got, you know, all of West Hollywood where it's, you know, bar and club after bar and club. And you're like, wow, this is incredible. you know, so I totally get why people would think that, you know, because you know, wherever you came from and you go to, that's the new big thing. So,
well, plus before the internet, you know, the internet has taken away a lot of the mystery of life.
Yeah.
But before the internet, you just had urban legends and word of mouth. And so it was a whole different ball game. I remember thinking as a teenager, 16 years old, that Tulsa was full of uncracked mysteries of fabulousness that I could find.
Wow.
You know, it's just, you just didn't know any better.
Well, and it might be too, you know, I've never had the pleasure to be in Oklahoma. So, I mean, that could be, you know, and the most accurate statement ever, but maybe people, you know, it's kind of like Huntington Beach, you know, years ago, it wasn't that necessarily a nice place. Now it's really great, but people don't ever say, you know, come move here, because we just keep it out. And I'll have friends that'll come down and visit, and they're like, why don't more people live here? Why isn't the traffic really horrible? I said, because we don't advertise it. So maybe that's like Tulsa. You know, Tulsa really is this mecca, but, you know, they say, don't tell anybody.
You know, when you find where in life, and I kind of get on this with people, because there's, especially among the gay community, there's this thing where we get so much validation by where we live.
Sure,
And we are often so bitchy about where, and, you know, people have a million reasons for where they live, and a lot of them are very valid. You know, they want to be close to people they love or people they need to care for, or they have a career path they're following that took them there. But, this one size fits all, that if you don't live in these two or three places, you know, that's always
silly.
Been annoying to me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're going to find great community wherever you want to find a great community, and you can be miserable wherever you want to be miserable. So it doesn't matter if you're in a small town or a big town, you know, you're going to, you know, what it's like that, you know, gratitude, where you're going to be grateful for where you live. You're suddenly going to have a great life. If you're miserable where you live, you're going to hate where you're living. So.
Right. Well, Speaking of Oklahoma City real quick, I'd like to give a quick shout out to the mayor of gay Oklahoma City, Floyd Martin. I talk about community, and one thing about that city is anyone who's crossed through that city in the gay community, he keeps track of. His mind's like a steel trap, and he can tell you where anyone is if you ask him, hey, that guy that used to dance on the pole back in 94 and sing XYZ, and he'd be like, oh, honey, she moved down to Austin. You know, he could tell you anything. But what really moves me, his 50th birthday just happened, and of course, I'm 41, he's 50, and the amount of people that did not make it this far is mind-boggling. And he keeps track of all of them. He has a file on Facebook with over 200 photos of people who've passed that he knows.
So,
and I've scrolled through them, and, you know, there's so much that gets lost in the shuffle. You don't realize who's passed, and you take a few minutes to go through, and just he's the heart of that city, and these people who passed are still somehow with us because they're in his albums. You know, they're still part of the fabric of the community, and it's an incredible thing that he does.
And now to get off topic for just a second, number one, thank you for doing that, Floyd. But number two, in several places tomorrow, we have this thing called Super Tuesday that's going to be taking place. One of the states happens to be Missouri. What's the political climate like in the Midwest right now?
The Trump thing is terrifying. It really is. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I feel like I keep feeling like this the past week has had to damage him somewhat, but I really don't know. I really don't know. And then on the Democratic side, you have people, anyone above 30 who's lived through, especially when you live through the turmoil of seeing how the Clintons were attacked, they were, and how dirty the Republicans can play it. A lot of people over 30 just do not see how Bernie could win. And it's not that we don't like Bernie, and most of us are very appreciative. I mean, Bernie has won the messaging primary, definitely.
Yeah.
He has moved everything over, and I'm very grateful to him for it. And if he were the nominee, I would enthusiastically support him. But I don't know if it's PTSD or just being a realist. I just do not see how he could stand up to whatever they would bring bring to him. And for that reason, you know, Bill Clinton was the first, when I was a senior in high school, and he gave his speech when he won and included a shout out for gay people. There was never, no precedent before that had ever said anything positive about gay people, you know? And so I think that's why a lot of us kind of, the Clintons are kind of like family to us.
So what do you think of the statement that was made last week, probably just, I don't want to say flippant, but it was made by Hillary about the Reagan's, you know, opening up a dialogue regarding HIV and AIDS. And then, you know, obviously there is this huge 700 paragraph apology letter where, you know, somebody carefully crafted what was going to be said. And you know, it seems like at least my feed on Facebook where, you know, everybody who loved Hillary, we hate her. How could blah, blah. And then all of a sudden with that, oh, well that, you know, she's apologized. I don't know what everybody's so upset about. It's like, 6 seconds ago, you were vilifying this lady.
That's what the internet does. I mean, have you noticed that? Everyone has to outrage each other. And there's no room for nuance. There's no room, you know, I guess the only way to get heard is to be the loudest voice. It was a very tone-deaf statement. I believe that, you know, I'm sure you're aware of the three blind men and the elephant. You know, you send three blind men in, one feels the tail, one feels the belly, one feels the ear, and then they go out and debate about what an elephant is. And
right,
so
right.
From what I understand is that when Hollywood types did want to try to get through to Reagan at all about AIDS, Nancy was their only hope. And so, no, Nancy, let's get this. Nancy was no friend of the AIDS community by any stretch of the imagination, but as she was better than Ronald, I guess, in the fact that I think to some micro level at the end, maybe she pushed a little bit, and maybe some Hillary had a view of that that grew in her mind. That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
That's all I can think of. But, she corrected it.
Well, I think tomorrow is going to be interesting on a lot of fronts. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. So if I'd say that may the best candidate win, I'm not sure what that really is, but it will be interesting to watch. Chris, we've got about 2.5 minutes left before the show's over. Tell us what you're working on now, where people can find you. How do you like to stay connected to your fan base? All of the good stuff.
Facebook, I have two profiles because I'm always in Facebook jail, but you can find me on Facebook at Chris Ando or Twitter at Emperor Ando. And my book is on Amazon, Delusions of Grandeur, A Few Hundred Tales from the Emperor of St. Louis. Love your feedback.
There we go. So everybody, it's been Chris Ando. Chris, thank you for being on for the full hour. I just love chatting with you. I'm so glad you let us just kind of go off topic on haunted houses and, you know, everything else. So that was
it's an honor to be here. I really appreciate it. I really enjoy your energy, and thanks for having me.
Thank you, Chris. Talk to you soon. Have a great night.
All right, you too.
Thank you. Everybody, just a real quick reminder, what's happening the rest of the week. Tomorrow, author Jeff Michaels, he's going to be talking about his series of metaphysical books, his young adult fantasy book. All of them are on Amazon, and we can't wait for you to see that or hear from Jeff tomorrow night. Wednesday, we have Zoe Niklaus and Doug Johnston, our psychics. So call in early. The phone lines open 15 minutes before showtime. That's your little secret to get your call answered, because we legitimately get hundreds of calls every time they're on. So if you want to call in, you have to call in early to get your question answered. Rob Watson joins me on Thursday for Rated LGBT Radio. We've got Greg Archer as our VIP special guest. Again, Friday on the Friday Night Dance Party, it's Oleg with his brand new album. And then Saturday morning, bright and early, it is Super Gay Radio. And if I can make the time, I want to, but I don't want to spend the money. We've got Derek Hartley with the Derek and Romaine Show, DNR 2.0. Go Derek and Romaine. He's going to be at the Mini Gay Days at Anaheim at Disney. And so if I can go and visit with him outside of the park, so I'm not going to pay to go in, that would be fun, but I have to see what's going to be up with that. So with that, folks, I appreciate everybody being here. Appreciate Keith from New Jersey being a new listener and chiming in. Appreciate Tony talking about his time with the Ouija board when he was a kid and his mom getting very upset with him. So burn that Ouija board in the fireplace. And we will see you live tomorrow night on Tuesday. If you like the show, follow the show. You can get an email update or text update once a day for every day that we're on. It tells you the unique show link that you can listen in on. And we're also on iPad, on iTunes as a podcast. And you can join us and listen to all 800 past episodes or however many we've got out of 4 years. With that, folks, have a great night. I appreciate you being here. Love doing this with and for you. And new exciting news is coming up soon. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.